Welcome to the Autoimmune Connections podcast. I'm your host, Tammy Anderson of thrivingprimallywellness.com. I'm an adventure enthusiast, a survivor of an autoimmune health crisis, and a certified functional diagnostic nutrition practitioner who helps people who are struggling with chronic health conditions rebuild their health and reclaim their lives. I have created Autoimmune Connections to bring you hope and to empower you to take control of your own health and become the healthiest, happiest version of you. Each week, I will bring you the stories of real people who struggled with long-term chronic health issues or autoimmune conditions, who reclaimed their health and their lives by making changes to their diet and lifestyle after being failed by the conventional medicine sick care model. On occasion, I will bring you experts in the health and wellness space, often people who themselves reclaimed their health and their lives from the brink of disaster by taking their health into their own hands. The content of this show is for general informational purposes only and is not intended to serve as a substitution for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or to treat or cure any illness or medical condition. I will end each episode with a weekly nudge, or in other words, a little nudge of encouragement to try something new that will move you towards improved health. Happy journeys, everyone, and enjoy the show. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Autoimmune Connections podcast. Today with me on the show, I have a close friend and colleague, Dori Martin, who is here to share with us her decades-long secret struggle with an eating disorder that had her vacillating back and forth between secretly starving herself and binging and purging. This eating disorder robbed Dori of her health and her ability to enjoy life for over two decades. And today on the show, Dori shares with us what she finally did to kick this eating disorder in the ass. Dori, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me on your show today.
I'm so happy that you agreed to come on and share your really personal and sensitive story. And I didn't say this in the intro, but you did share that this is so personal that many of your really close friends don't know this story yet.
Yeah, this is sort of an outing of myself of sorts, I guess. That way I don't have any more secrets, right?
Right. This takes a lot of courage for you to come on here and publicly talk about this. So kudos to you for that. And I think, you know, this topic is going to really strike a chord and benefit a lot of people.
I hope so. I think it would be worth it if people heard this story and they were able to think about maybe how they can help themselves get past this horrible situation. You know, I know it's been said in a lot of, you know, the people, the experts, they say that this is something people can't recover from. That was part of the reason why I kind of resigned myself and just quietly struggled with it. But there are things you can do, and it starts with, you know, how you treat your body, your lifestyle decisions, your food choices. So
let's get started.
Fantastic. Okay.
I have a really intriguing story about something you struggled with for over a decade, and you made some pretty substantial changes to your diet and lifestyle that really turned those, you know, that problem around. So tell us about what was going on and how it started.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, like we talked about before, there's a lot of psychology and history that comes from, you know, something that really shakes up your state of health. And for mine, I have to say, it began when I was really small. And I lost my dad to cancer when I was 3, but I was told that he was on a business trip. And so for a couple of years, I was waiting for him to come back. And I would literally have dreams about him coming in the door with like a teddy bear or something with his arms spread wide open to give me a big hug. And, you know, I'd have dreams during Easter that he would come home and bring chocolate bunnies, or, you know, just that he was waiting for me just like I was waiting for him. And one day he would show up and I would see him again. But that stretched
and
out
so
over
a couple
of years.
So you truly had this childhood fantasy that you really believed was going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just, you know, I missed him, and it seemed like it was just dragging out for so long, and I couldn't understand why this business trip was lasting so long. And so, anyways, when I was 5 and I was in, we had a neighbor who had a nice swing set. So I was there playing, and we were, somehow my dad came up and I mentioned he was on a business trip, and they said, you know, no, he's not, he's dead. And so I was so upset when he said that. I couldn't believe it. But I ended up running home up the hill to my house, and I asked my mom, you know, this person's saying that my dad's not coming home. Was he really dead? And she said, yes. And she didn't know how the idea came into my head, she said. I remember somebody had mentioned it, and I can't really remember who it was or how it happened, but it was something that somebody had mentioned. I think it was because they didn't really want to or didn't know how to handle my questions when I was small, or just to explain what was happening in the moment. Yeah,
so it wasn't your mom that told you that your dad was, your mom didn't tell you that your dad had died? It was somebody else?
I'm not sure if it was my mom. It could have been her, but I just, she was surprised. And so then the only conclusion I could draw in that moment was either she had said it in the moment thinking that I'd forget, or it was someone else, because she really acted surprised when I confronted her with it. And so, yeah, and I can't even remember. I just remember the words. And so when I found out that he was, in fact, not coming back, it just, you know, now that I think about it and having spoken to, you know, counselors about it, you know, it's one of those situations where when you're small, things imprint into your mind, some story that you tell yourself. And it's something that, you know, you don't question when they're that small. And I think that imprint that I got in that moment and during that experience was that somebody had abandoned me, and that for whatever reason, he didn't want to be around me. And then when I found out that he was actually not coming back, there was a sense of, I think that I need to take care of myself and not rely on people, because, you know, whether or not they intend to or not, people just come and go in your life. There's no permanence. And so, right. I think that made me more independent and less likely to accept help or ask for help when needed, because I needed to be able to do it on my own. And that's been kind of the way that it set the tone for the way that my life unfolded going forward from there. And also, it also made me feel like, because, you know, there was a sense of abandonment or rejection, I felt like I needed to up my game and be more perfect and, you know, present myself in that way so that I wouldn't be rejected or feel like I
wouldn't abandon you.
Right, exactly. And so fast forward at some point in time too, somebody told my mom, oh, you know, your daughter's a little bit chubby, and handed her a card or some brochure about weight loss. And, you know, this is before I was 11 years old. So it was kind of, you know, an odd thing to have happen. But I also remember that kind of stuck too. Looking at my old pictures, I was never, you know, I wasn't really slender, but it wasn't something that warranted that kind of a comment. So kind of hindsight tells me, well, that was just something that someone said in passing, but I really took it to heart. So that set me along the path of understanding that, okay, I needed to make sure that I did things perfectly. And so I was stuck with this idea or this thing about being perfect and not having any perception from anybody that there was anything wrong with me. So I wouldn't really talk about my problems. I wouldn't really be authentic and share anything that was going on inside, because that would just, you know, it was a way to kind of potentially be rejected or be seen as not good enough. And also I felt like, you know, I had to keep my weight at a certain level, and I just couldn't, you know, my body is the way that my body is structured. You know, I've got a lot of muscle mass, and I tend to be heavier than what the insurance companies, and in fact, the time I looked it up, said I was supposed to be 108 pounds. And I would always hover around at, you know, when I was at my full height, 135. And so I would never get there. And anyway, so it was just an unrealistic expectation. But as I was getting older,
yeah,
you know,
if I could just interject here, you know,
course.
Those standards for weight that insurance companies put out or that you see at the doctor's office, they are so, you know, they don't consider all of the variables, you know.
No, like, they don't.
You have a lot of muscle mass, and, you know, these BMI scales, they don't consider the amount of muscle mass that a person has. I mean, on a scale, on one of those scales now, I might be considered on the way to being overweight or obese. And if anybody who saw me would know that that's not the case, I just have a lot of muscle. So those kinds of messages that you were being sent based on these measures that are just subjective and not considering all the variables are just so damaging to the psyche for so many women. Especially.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I totally agree, because I looked at the number, and this is the thing that was acceptable, and it just, it didn't question. I mean, this is the sort of, you know, it's written in black and white, and insurance company did that, and it projects, you know, life expectancy and everything from that. I mean, as a kid, that didn't come into play. I just somehow got this number in my head and felt like I had to hit that number or I wasn't acceptable. So, so it kind of set me up.
There's so many women that your story is going to resonate with so many women, because this is what's happening to so many of us.
Right. Yeah. It's unreasonable. It's such an unreasonable expectation, and it's so damaging. And so, you know, with those things planted in my head, it really set me up into this place of, you know, having to be perfect. So I couldn't talk about it. And so I suffered by myself and, in silence. And then I had this unrealistic expectation of trying to morph my body into something that it was never meant to be. So it got me into a place where I started being really worried about what I was eating. And, you know, at one point, I think our family went on a group weight loss program, and that just sort of got that implanted in my head that, oh, you know, I need to start manipulating how I ate my food and maybe cut down as much as possible. So that began a lifelong negative relationship with food and eating. I mean, it was the enemy. And often I was afraid when I was hungry, because that meant that I would have to feed myself, which meant that I had the potential of gaining more weight. And it was a really horrible experience. And I remember my mom decided when I was in high school, you know, your body's changing and it's kind of awkward. And she ended up deciding to buy a yogurt shop. This was in high school when I was still sort of learning, you know, how to be a social creature and wanting to be participating, of course, as other kids are, in school activities and social activities. But she wanted me to work at the shop. So I was relegated to, after school, taking the bus and going to the yogurt shop. There you have ice cream and cookies and pastries and all of this other stuff. And so I was angry and I felt stuck. And I remember thinking, you know, this isn't what I want. And I'm kind of like, I can't get away from this food, and I can't avoid all of this, you know, these temptations of, like, you know, my favorite ice cream. She had gelato, she had cookies, she had, and so it was like a person with weight issues. It was their nightmare. It was my nightmare. And I was just stuck there from after school until around 10 o'clock closing time. That was the first time that, you know, after doing diets and, you know, exercising and losing weight, gaining weight and not being consistent, I'm stuck in this ice cream store and I have issues with food. And so I remember just like eating too much and, you know, all the toppings, M&Ms, whatever. And I was frustrated and angry and resentful and didn't want to be there. And that was the first time that I ran to the bathroom, because I overate and I just lost all the food. And that just started like a stint of binging and purging, because I was stuck there and had nowhere to go. And I didn't know how to deal with my food cravings and, you know, binging issues. And then I went to college and I was able to abstain, because I was able to control my food altogether. And I would probably have like maybe an apple and maybe a handful of raisins. And I thought that cream of wheat was really healthy, and that would be my food for the day. Yeah. And so that's what I would have. And then I would have maybe, because I like to sit in cafes, I would probably have a latte during the day. And so that was what I ate for a lot of my college life.
So you're not really getting any protein.
No.
Or fat.
No.
To give
no.
you satiety and help you feel full,
right.
and to mm-hmm. nourish your cells.
Right.
You're really just, I mean, you were eating some fruit, but it's really, you know, the sugar and the fruit.
Exactly.
And the cream of wheat turning to sugar in your gut is
yep.
just, I'm sure, wreaking havoc on your blood sugar as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Making you feel hungry all the time.
I was hungry all the time. And sometimes I've had bagels as well, just to, because it's supposed to be healthy and low fat. Remember the Susan Powder days? So basically that's what I was living off. And so of course, you know, I had horrible gut issues. I was experiencing brain fog, meaning that I would get up in the morning and still feel groggy, like I hadn't slept at all. And then I would have to go into class and I would take notes and I would kind of zone out. And then I would have, you know, of course, finals to study for, and I would fall asleep on my book. I mean, my face would just, I would wake up with my, you know, book as my pillow, and I would think, what happened? How did I even, and it's 10 o'clock at night. So then I would have to stay up all night and study to get to my classes or finish my you know, my assignments. So it started this cycle of like really horrible sleep patterns and brain fog and just having stomach problems. And I lost so much weight that I remember having a friend come up to me and say, you know, Dory, girls are supposed to have curves. And actually, I thought that was a compliment. That meant that I was getting thinner. And I love that people were saying I was skinny. It was a compliment. It was a good thing. But, you know, I didn't have any muscle mass. It was just not so great looking. And I was very weak.
Right. And yeah, you're not nourishing your body or your brain.
Exactly. I wasn't having any nutrients. I wasn't taking any nutrients. Then I had this grand idea that I would be a vegetarian because I thought, well, you know, that might help give me energy and make me healthier. Plus, you know, the school I went to, I had a friend who was a vegetarian and kind of guilted me into thinking that, you know, all animals have moms. And so I thought, okay, this is the way to go. And so I ended up basically whatever little protein I was eating, I stopped. And so I would have beans sometimes. I didn't research into what it meant to be a vegetarian. So, you know, I would probably have falafels and those kinds of things sometimes, but my main staple would be, embarrassed to say, white rice and teriyaki sauce and maybe some broccoli on the side. And so I thought I was being really healthy and that I was being really morally integrity because I didn't have any meat products and I didn't have milk. I didn't have eggs. I didn't have any of that stuff.
Oh, my goodness. Your body must have just been crying for nutrition.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know what it was, though. I mean, I didn't know why my brain wasn't functioning properly. I didn't know why I couldn't concentrate. I didn't know why I couldn't complete a sentence. Sometimes I would forget what I was saying. I don't even know how I made it through college. In fact,
how long did this vegetarian stage last?
Throughout my whole college experience.
Oh, really?
Actually, I want to say, 6 months into it, I want to say. And at some point, I actually did have to drop a class because I just couldn't focus and make it through, and I was failing it. And so I had to drop a class and then wait and take it over again. And somehow
can I interrupt for a second?
Of course.
It never occurred to you that all of this brain dysfunction, not being able to stay awake for classes, falling asleep when you were trying to study, brain fog, it never occurred to you that this be attributed to your vegetarian diet?
No, actually, I thought that I was, and as I said, I didn't really study into it. I thought that I had no idea how nutrition worked, so I did not make the connection. And, you know, sadly, because it was helping me lose weight, I wanted so badly to appear perfect on the outside, and it almost wouldn't have mattered if somebody said something about it to me at that time in my life. I was willing to make some kind of trade-off to be able to appear thin and what I thought was more perfect than, you know, it would have been if I just kind of ate whatever I wanted. And I thought this was the only way to kind of lean out my body. Yeah. Right. So that's how it went in my college days. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, I ended up, you know, in real life going to work, you have to dine out with other people. And so I couldn't really contain or control the way that I ate as a student, because I had to be in a social environment and working and with people. And so I started incorporating foods back into my diet. And it was kind of interesting, you know, reintroducing meat into your diet after not having had any is a process that you reject it in the beginning, and then slowly it stops upsetting your stomach. But then I was also introducing dairy, and I started having horrible gut issues. And again, didn't associate it with that, but I would curl up into a little ball, and it was just excruciating. And I didn't know what was wrong, but it would pass. So it didn't occur to me to really get that checked out and find out what was going on with that. And then, you know, after all of that, lack of protein and lack of fat and everything, you can imagine that my hormones were out of whack. So I had horrible skin problems. Yeah, every time right between like a week before my period, I would have horrible flare-ups. And it was just like, I was just waiting for it. Like, oh no, what's going to show up on my face today or my arms or whatever. It was hideous. And so I had a lot of issues around skin problems too. So all the name of beauty and perfection. So,
And you probably didn't feel super beautiful with your skin broken out like that though, right?
Really? That's that, you know, a speckle of makeup can't handle. So yeah, and I didn't make the connection. And you know, reading magazines and looking at the pictures and everything, I kind of, I guess, cherry picked what I thought I could do. And so, you know, and also being you know, kind of like pushed on with the idea that you can be this perfect if you did this exercise or if you ate this diet for a week. I was following all of those things and it just wasn't working out for me very well. And then as a young adult, I introduced food back into my life, but it was always a really contentious relationship. And it was always one where I had to be careful and avoid, you know, nighttime hours because that's when I would really start snacking. And so food was a really stressful thing in my life and mealtime was very stressful. They were stressful events 3 times a day. And sometimes I would just avoid it altogether just because it was easier to do that than to try one thing and then get into the cycle of binging again. So, and you know, as I remember when I started working my first job, I would pretty much start nodding off during meetings. I remember being nudged. I don't even know how I kept that job because I wasn't able to really focus and doing research, desktop publishing and writing, you know, CVs for attorneys. And so stuff that you needed to really think with your mind. Somehow I was able to, I was able to get through it, but I just, you know, I thought, oh, maybe it's because I'm staying up late and hanging out with friends. And that might've been part of it. But they were able to get into work the next day and get through their day without that happening. And so I started paying more attention to my sleep patterns. And part of it is just sort of like getting into the workforce and getting into a routine. But my eating habits were still not great. I remember I would have frozen yogurt for lunch with a piece of fruit. And I thought that was healthy. Goodness. And again, I would have like a couple of
sugar on top of more sugar.
Yeah. Well, you know, non-fat yogurt,
with
right?
No fat and no protein. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And so I was living off of that. And then, you know, it was never really satiating. I was never satisfied and I never felt like it was safe around food. So it just continued on that way. Or a giant bagel, you know, I would have a giant bagel with like non-fat cream cheese or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So then, as I got into, being, more mindful about health and wellness and, you know, as I became a parent, things got a little bit better, but I've always had to be careful. I've always had to be mindful about what I did after dinner because that was where I always had my problems. And sometimes things would just disappear in the night, like a whole thing of ice cream or a whole bag of chips or, you know, a whole package of cookies. And so I remember running out to the store and, you know, replacing that so that people wouldn't notice that whole thing disappeared people would be mad at me.
You ate a big package of cookies or, you know, an entire container of ice cream. But at the same time, you got the psychology going where you are not wanting to gain weight. So you didn't associate these foods with weight gain or did you
absolutely.
Eliminate the foods after you ate them? Like how did you do that?
Combination of those things. I would eliminate them or I wouldn't eat for the next day for a good part of the day or I would try and eat well the following days. Knowing good and well that the food wasn't good for me was really, I guess I knew it was bad for me. I knew that, you know, the sugar wasn't good. I knew that the potato chips, the starch and everything wasn't good for me. The ice cream wasn't going to be helpful, especially eating all of that during that time of day in the evening hours. But I guess fast forward, I ended up getting more into health and wellness, learning about it just because this has been a problem for me, but also because of health issues with my family. I guess to answer your question, the short answer is that yes, I knew all of that food was bad for you, just like an alcoholic knows that alcohol is bad for them, just like a heroin addict knows that heroin is bad for them. But it doesn't stop them because there's an addiction involved. Right. And that was something I didn't understand. I knew that I was addicted. I just didn't know what to do about it. And I was as helpless as a person who is in the throes of a full-blown addiction. And I didn't think I could ever kick it. It was almost like I had to work this into my life. This was my life. I had gone through group counseling. I had gone through one-on-one counseling for this. I had gone through journaling and, you know, trying whatever I could to try to get past it. And I would have stints where because I got engaged with something in my life or there was some shift where I was traveling where it went away for a while. But then at some point, inevitably, you know, I would always get into the cycle of like binging and instead of purging at some, you know, later on, I just stopped, you know, I would just like abstain from eating anything of substance for a couple of days or I would just pack on just like leafy greens for a few days to try and make it up. But then at nighttime, so I was eating a pristine diet in the daytime, you know, my proteins and everything. And at nighttime, I would go haywire. It was just, that was the way. And I would anticipate it with my food choices and be impeccable during the daytime, knowing that I might mess up at the nighttime. And it was a victory to just have like 8 cookies versus the whole bag. You know, that was a victory for me. So I was able to manage that. And then it would be something like maybe more wholesome oatmeal or, you know, something like that to just sort of like, it was really a matter of like degrees and kind of negotiating. But it was always kind of, it's always been a struggle. And I kind of decided that this was the way it was going to be for me, that
so,
food would always be
so struggle. You did talk about you had gone through group programs and individual one-on-one therapies through this. So you got to a point where you knew you couldn't handle it on your own and you needed some help. Is I understand that correctly?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And were those programs effective for you at all? Did you have any?
Actually, no. And it's no, none. And you know, the funny thing is the reason why the group programs didn't work was because I was too busy being perfect. But there's nothing wrong and I'm handling it. It's fine. I wasn't able to open up and really talk about the ugly stuff, you know, the insecurities, you know, the lack of, I think, love for self, feeling like I wasn't
good enough. Did you seek out these programs on your own or did you have a family member who?
That's a really good question. Yeah. When I was in college, my boyfriend at the time realized what was going on with me. And he took my hand and walked me over to see a counselor on campus. And that's when I started seeking help. And the counselor suggested the group counseling. And so that's when I got into that. And then just because it was taking over my happiness as I was a young adult, I decided to go see a counselor and talk through it and try and work through it. So I went through quite a few programs and I did food journaling. And I did one-on-one, which worked better for me than group counseling because I wouldn't say very much because I just didn't want to be vulnerable. And so I got nothing out of it. And in fact, it made me feel even more isolated because in a group of people where I should have been able to say something, I still felt incapable of doing that. Right. So, yeah, so I did know there was a problem. And as I said, at some point, because I'd been struggling with it for so long, read books about it, did all kinds of things to try and, you know, help myself through this, I just decided this is the way it's going to be for me. And I'm not sure how this is going to affect my health going forward, but my quality of life, not feeling like you have control over something is just the worst feeling, you know, that, well, it draws up that whole idea of not being perfect. You're also being weak and having this mental issue and feeling like you're kind of flawed is a horrible thing.
So you're working on being perfect, but reality of the situation is that you are like completely spun out of control and anything but.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, thinking that, oh, I'm going to lose weight and be healthy and I'm anything but. And so then, you know, as I got into health space, helping other people, being a caregiver for my family and, you know, helping family members with chronic health issues, I started reading about nutrition, which is, of course, a pillar of health, and diet, rest, exercise, you know, stress reductions, supplementation, the things that we learn. And I came across an elimination diet. And actually, I was building a health coach practice, and I had all these other things dialed down, but I always felt like I was, you know, basically not really dialed in this way. I knew what to say and I knew how to coach a person into it, but I wasn't in integrity with, you know, my own relationship with food. So it made me feel like an imposter about the whole thing. And what happened was I had been asked to speak about functional diagnostic nutrition. I had gotten my certification and they asked if I could speak about diet and nutrition. And so I looked into an elimination diet, had enough time before the event to really try it out. And because I wanted to be in integrity with what I was telling people, I went all in. And in doing that, I cut out, of course, the most inflammatory foods, which includes grains, gluten, dairy, soy, eggs, nuts, any of the vegetable oils that are unhealthy. And within a week, things shifted. It was pretty crazy because I had been dealing with this over 20 years, actually. And,
what were those shifts? How did they shift?
Super
noticeable.
It was, the first 3 days were really tough. And then I realized, you know, this is doable. I can actually, you know, exist without these other foods, but I would walk by a bowl of cookies and not really care. In fact, it just, when I wasn't hungry, I wasn't hungry. All of a sudden, my body signals were reaching me. Right. When I was full, I could feel that I was full, and I didn't have this idea that I needed something sweet to follow it, to chase it down. And, you know, ice cream boxes started staying in the house for more than a night, and then a week, and then a month, and I had to throw it away. And then, yeah, that really happens. But the boys just assume that it wasn't there anymore because mom got to it. Now they're realizing, and that's that pattern's changed. But it's
so you got started as a health coach, and you were coaching other people to build up their health using, you know, diet and other lifestyle changes, but you yourself weren't following those same recommendations that you were giving to your clients. So you felt like you were a fraud.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I was following it during the daytime, but I knew that in the nighttime I had this problem and I understood it was an addiction. I just didn't think that I would ever be able to do anything about it. And so, yeah, I felt like, a total imposter fraud because I could do it during the daytime, but I couldn't really fix anything or control myself in the evening. And I'm a pretty disciplined person. If I put my mind to something, I usually get it accomplished. You know, I don't have this problem in all of areas in my life. So it was a real embarrassing and perplexing situation for me. It's not something that I really was comfortable sharing with anyone. In fact, a lot of my friends probably still, unless they listen, they don't know about this aspect of my life. But yeah, after going on to the elimination diet after a week, that craving went away and feeling like I need to get up in the middle of the night, like I was feeling restless or kind of fidgety, sort of like an addict is fidgety for whatever drug that they're of the day or what they use. It just didn't happen anymore. I could go to sleep and feel satisfied, not feel fidgety. I could go to sleep and get up and feel like I was refreshed. My skin issues are not a problem. And also, I didn't have, the stomach issues started going away. It didn't go away completely, but I think after years of abuse, that's probably going to take a while. But definitely that was much improved as well. But also just not having this lack of control around food is so freeing. When you have a problem like this, it just, it's so shameful. I mean, it felt shameful and embarrassing, and it just felt like you couldn't talk to anybody about it, not even family members. And I didn't feel like anybody would understand because it wasn't something I really understood, this idea that you just had no control over something like that. So having gone off the sugar and starches and all of that and all the regular inflammatory foods, I was afraid to go back on it, some of the foods again. Of course, as you know, with elimination diet, you're supposed to reintroduce. But one thing I know from that whole experience is that I really have to limit my sugar intake very severely, and I can't have a lot of starchy foods. And if I can do that, then I'm golden. I mean, life is good. And I can be really healthy, and I can be integrity when I tell a person, you know, about the importance of food, how it can affect you. And for some people, it is a true addiction, and that, not to feel shamed or embarrassed, but to know that it's part of your biochemistry. There's just something about your biochemistry that doesn't gel well. I mean, for everybody, I don't think that's a great thing, but for some, it's more extreme than for others. And, you know, I thought it was a mental defect, but now I understand it's a biochemical issue for me.
Absolutely. And, you know, our body is just this amazing pharmacy, you know?
Yeah,
absolutely. Our body creates all of the hormones and, you know, just the natural medicines that our body needs, but it needs to be nourished with the right foods and nutrients in order to create all of those hormones correctly. Otherwise, we end up in this wacky situation like what was going on with you. Your hormones were giving you all sorts of signals that just didn't work for your body. So you ended up in this, you know, metabolic chaos.
Right. I mean, it was sending me signals all along. And that's why I'm really grateful and excited that you gave me the opportunity to talk about this, because if had I known years ago, it would have really prevented, you know, all of the anguish and suffering and feeling guilty and all the health issues I'd been experiencing. I mean, even my menstrual cycles, I mean, it would be hideous. I would be in dread. 2 weeks before, I would already have PMS symptoms. And then I would, you know, so basically I had 1 week in a month where I had a feeling of being a normal human. But for the rest of time, it was all about, oh no, it's on its way. Oh, here comes the breakouts. And then, oh, here comes the cramps. And then I'm, you know, having a heavy flow, and it was hideous. I had to stay near, like, figure out when, you know, stay where the nearest bathrooms were at all times, because it was just really bad. And now it just, it's a no-brainer. I mean, it's not a big deal. I wish that it was like this for 20 years. It could have been if I had this information on that. You know, food can really heal something like this. It can make such a big difference. And right. if people were aware and listened to their bodies and took those signals that the body's been giving the whole time, instead of like thinking about an agenda of being perfect, or, you know, basically punishing your body into submission, really turning it around and really listening to the body's messages and what's trying to say, nourishing it and not worrying about appearances, all of that will, you know, you'll be your best self, your healthiest self. And that's beautiful, you know, absolutely. No matter what your size or your body composition or any of that. And so, you know, it's quite the journey.
Yeah, I think we put so much emphasis on achieving a certain number on this magic box that sits on the bathroom floor.
Right.
That we forget. And, you know, our society has really taught us that through, you know, media messages and magazine covers showing,
that's right.
you know, Hollywood superstars and all of that, that it's this image that we have to, this body image that we need to achieve, and completely lose sight or don't even think about what's going on inside our body and how we feel. And, you know, many of us in this world don't even know what normal feels like. Normal feels good.
It does. Yep. It's very empowering to know that it's in your hands. You can make this decision, and, you know, you have to make that decision. For me, having to do this in an end and be really on point with the elimination diet, because I had to teach it to somebody, that made me really dig in and make sure that I was totally on board and integrity all in. But, you know, the other thing too is, I agree with you. I don't look at magazines, you know, fashion, fitness, all of those magazines, because I think it's just selling you a bunch of stuff that really is a fraud. I mean, in order to be happy, you don't have to pursue those exterior things. You have to be in a life of purpose. You have to do the things that you love, and you have to live a healthy, clean life. And those things will make you happy. Chasing after something that's really not possible is a diversion. And so I stopped looking at magazines. I stopped reading those things and start looking at more of the science and reading about, you know, the things such as what you do, functional health and coaching, and, you know, ways of really building health from the inside out. And all of those things will come. You'll be the best version of yourself if you just do those things. And it's made such a big difference.
When we take the focus off of what really doesn't matter and put it on what does, we really can have some major, you know, shifts in our health, as a focus changes to what's important, which is how we feel each and every day.
Right.
You know, how we can manage our day-to-day activities, our work commitments, our family commitments, our commitments to ourselves, to being able to exercise and feel good. You know, but when we're run down and exhausted because eating foods that are causing our brains not to be able to function and starving ourselves from the nutrients that we need for our, you know, basic metabolic function, we end up with this just, you know, what you were experiencing, just complete metabolic chaos where you just weren't functioning.
Not being aware that there's a cascade of things that happen in your body, you know, your hormones. I had gut issues. It just, on a functional level, I wasn't functioning optimally for many years, you know, and it's kind of a sad thing, because it's not difficult to turn it around. I mean, it's not easy. It's a lifestyle change, but it's a lot more, I think it's easier to kind of live this life after you've experienced the changes, and you don't want to go back. I mean, I remember what I came from. And so if I do for a moment feel like, oh, you know, that French bread smells so good, then I remember what I came from. And immediately I think, you know, it's not worth it. I really like the life I have now and the way that I function now. And so there's some control involved maybe in the beginning, but, you know, when you feel like it's so much better and you feel so much healthier on the other side of it, there's really no turning back. I think it's just such a great thing to be able to get on this side of it. I was one of those people who thought that I couldn't do that. I couldn't change my diet because I was so screwed up with the way I was eating. But actually, if you just make the decision and take those steps, it can be done. I feel like if I could do it, anybody could do it.
Absolutely. And once you have those foods that are causing your body harm, you know, once they're not no longer important, a regular part of your diet, you begin to not crave them. You know, the cravings go away.
And then you
feel so good. You recognize that the consequences that would come with that food are really not worth it.
Yeah, and your body speaks to you more clearly. Like, for example, if I eat something with an egg in it, it'll tell me pretty clearly that that was probably not the great choice. So I think that you're more in tune with your body's messages once you start listening. And you absolutely, it's better to be in that space so that you can maintain what you have going forward. And it makes me feel good too, because when I talk to people about it, I am integrity now, and I can speak from this experience that I've had, and I can relate better for people who are in that same situation where they feel kind of out of control, and that this was something that they would never be able to get past.
What an awesome story. What was it, 20 years of struggle with your self-image and dealing with an eating disorder that you felt like you had tried everything to overcome, and it was, you know, really making some simple changes to the types of foods that you were eating that just completely turned your life around in a really short time. It's really an amazing story. And there's so many people out there, Dori, who are struggling with similar types of issues around food that I think, you know, your story will really resonate with a lot of people. So I know you said that, you know, even many of your close friends don't know that you struggled with this because you suffered in silence for so long, but I really think that your story has the power to impact a lot of people. So thank you for being willing to sort of come out and get your story out there.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I do hope that it resonates with people and it gives them, you know, hope and motivation to really do something, because I wish I had done something about this years ago. I wish I had had the information. You know, it would have really made a difference in my life. Focusing on these things that really don't matter. I mean, all the time and all the energy that I spent, you know, feeling bad about myself or blaming myself or feeling like there was something deeply wrong with me. But these changes can really make the difference. And that would be great if people can hear my story and take some steps and find solutions. They're all out there.
Yeah. So if people want to hear more from you, what kinds of projects are you working on and where can people find you?
Yeah. So I also have a podcast. It's called Off the Medical Grid. I have another story if you want to hear it, about a journey to healing. But I'm finding that a lot of people are, as you say with your podcast, we're dealing with a really big health crisis now, and it doesn't seem like it's getting much better if we continue on at status quo. And so I wanted to put the message out there that alternative shouldn't be alternative. It should be mainstream. There are a lot of great functional solutions out there, lifestyle diet changes that we can make to maintain pain health and also bring ourselves back to health. And so wanted to let people who've gotten that diagnosis and feel like they don't want to be on medication for life, or chemo or radiation isn't an option, they're basically off the medical grid. I mean, they're not in the medical model anymore, but then where do you go next? And so my podcast is called Off the Medical Grid, and it's intended to let people have some information about what the next steps might be, inspiration, and, you know, talking to experts about some solutions they have out there for people who want to find ways of healing without medication, drugs, chemo, and all of those other traditional medical options. And so that's one thing I'm working on. And I'm also, signed up just because of the life situation I was going through to a program called Miracle Mindset Academy with JJ Virgin. And because of my great success for myself with the program, I volunteered to be a mindset mentor in her team. And so I'm a Miracle Mindset Mentor with JJ Virgin on her program. So you can find me there. And I'm also a functional health coach with her team as well. And
awesome.
You can also, Yeah, and you can also find me on my Facebook page, Off the Medical Grid.
Awesome. So I will make sure to put all that in the show notes so that my listeners will be able to find you. I'm sure you're going
to
resonate with a lot of people. And I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. It was fun.
You're welcome. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in and listening until the end. I really do hope that if you or someone you love is struggling with an eating disorder or a food addiction, that you have found this episode to be very inspiring. And please share it with anyone you feel will benefit from hearing Dori's message. In this episode, Dori talks about how she removed some common inflammatory and addictive foods from her diet, which allowed her to get a handle on a 20-plus year struggle with disordered eating. Dori mentions removing soy, dairy, eggs, corn, peanuts, gluten, and all sugar and other sweeteners from her diet. For this week's weekly nudge, I encourage you to look at your own diet. Are these inflammatory foods included in your diet on a regular basis? If so, I encourage you to experiment with removing them and see how it makes you feel. That's all for this episode, and I'm going to sign off wishing you health and happiness. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Autoimmune Connections podcast. Because I am truly grateful and honored to have you as my listener, I will be doing a giveaway at the start of episode 9. Two lucky winners will receive a copy of Rob Wolf's new book, Wired to Eat, and two winners will receive a copy of Dr. Terry Wall's amazing new cookbook, The Wall's Protocol, Cooking for Life. To enter this giveaway, I am asking you to do two things. One, leave me a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast site you're listening on. I look forward to hearing your feedback. Your reviews really do help and will help me achieve my goal of making it to the top of the charts and make the new and noteworthy section on iTunes. This in turn will help me reach and impact more people who are suffering from chronic health conditions or autoimmune diseases. And two, visit my website, thrivingprimallywellness.com, and leave me your email to claim your free gift of a comprehensive, color-coded food list that I have developed that you can use to get started on improving your health right away, and also so that I can update you on upcoming podcast episodes and blogs, and where you can find some links to some of my favorite things. Finally, you can find links to all of the weekly shows on my website, thrivingprimallywellness.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next week.